Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on Monday, the 15th of August, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with Bob Youth and Mary Hockla about STEM's Saturday Thing. Simon Roberts will give us an update on thundercloudradio.com. We'll also find out about some workshops on insights into death and dying, the Garden of Eden, and Kung Fu, offered by the Temple Shukash Shalom. We'll also hear the Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, looks like rain with low temperatures around 50 degrees, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Forecast for Tuesday, looks like rain with high temperatures around 56 degrees. Looks like rain in the prediction for another few days at least.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. One of the top chiefs in Western Canada has been suspended from his job. Guy Lonechild is threatening legal action after his suspension as chief of the Federation of Saskatchewan Indians. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
In a statement, the Federation of Saskatchewan Indians said that Lonechild, along with some of his staff members, have been suspended with pay. The statement came after other chiefs within the FSIN had a chance to discuss a drinking and driving charge against Lonechild before he was elected in 2009, one which only came to light earlier this year. The chiefs also agreed to call a vote on September the 1st on Lonechild's position. Meanwhile, the embattled Lonechild has dismissed the other chief's actions as unlawful and is fighting back by threatening legal action.
It was not explained to myself or my legal counsel on which grounds that they were moving for a vote of non-confidence. The suspensions are indeed wrong, and that we need to ensure that the FSIN is held to task on this.
Lonechild says he attended the hearing over his leadership, but only to tell the other chiefs he would not accept their attempt to remove him from office. He says he was duly elected chief of the FSIN and complied with its regulations. Lonechild had apologized for the incident after the drinking and driving charges came to light in February. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Navajo Code Talkers are recognized for their service in World War II. Over the weekend, events were held in New Mexico and Arizona honoring the Navajo men who developed an unbreakable military code in their language used during the war. Navajo Code Talker Frank Chiwaleto from Crown Point, New Mexico, served in the 2nd Marine Division in the Pacific Theater beginning in 1944. The 86-year-old is grateful Navajo Code Talkers are remembered for their actions.
It's really an honor to have some people really go out of their way to respect and to honor the Navajo Code Talkers. I wish everyone would be doing that, but there are some that think we're just, you know, a joke or something, because most of them are young people, which they don't know what we really went through and what was accomplished. But the elders, they know what we went through.
The story of the Navajo Code Talkers is familiar to Dorothy Patterson. She traveled from Canton, Georgia to New Mexico to meet the Navajo Code Talkers in person. Patterson spoke to several of them Saturday in Gallup. She's been studying their history since she first saw them on television.
I've heard of their story, and I think it's to be admired. The first time I ever heard it, they was on the Bob Hope Show. He had them all on his stage. It means something, it really does, because I grew up during World War II, and it means a lot.
Willetto estimates there are less than 100 Navajo Code Talkers alive today, out of the more than 400 who were trained. He says most of the Code Talkers are over 80 years old and have needs like housing.
Like all veterans, we have a problem. We don't get no housing. We're still living in our hogans. We're still, some of us, herding sheep. We really don't look forward to getting a special treatment. We just done our job and what was expected of us as Navajo.
The Navajo Nation and the Navajo Code Talkers Association held a number of activities Sunday to mark National Navajo Code Talkers Day. During this month in 1987, the Aleut Foundation was officially incorporated. The Alaska Foundation provides scholarships to Aleut people for post-secondary education and career development. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with additional funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon, where my first guests are Bob Veith and Mary Hakala here to talk about the Saturday thing. Thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks.
So this is brought to you by STEM, and could you give me an overview of STEM, please, Mary?
Yeah, STEM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, Math. And we have a program based at the Juneau Economic Development Council that's funded by the U.S. Department of Defense and the National Defense Education Program, and also now we need to tout the Alaska State Legislature. Thanks to the Juneau delegation working with us and being very proactive on the STEM front, we have some additional funding to help make up some of our federal losses. And what it's all about is trying to grow the next generation, inspiring the next generation of scientists, engineers, problem solvers to tackle the challenges we face as a nation and as a state.
And you thought of a thing called the Saturday thing. Could you tell me about it, Bob, please?
The Saturday thing is actually modeled after an existing program at MIT that's been going on for about 10 years now. And one of our colleagues, Ed Moriarty, who works at the Edgerton Center at MIT, started the program there about 10 years ago, very successful. And Jeff Drake up at the University of Alaska Fairbanks started his program last year, and he's had a fair amount of success. So Mary and I talked about it, and Becca, and we decided we'd give it a try here in Juneau.
And this is a cool thing, the Saturday thing. It's I saw it in action a few weeks ago in Fairbanks, and, you know, it's about kids tinkering and alongside adult mentors tackling creative projects, and they get stuck. They don't know what to do next. They might turn to someone for some assistance. A lot of times the assistance turns into, let's see. How do you think you might solve that? What are your options? And, you know, a little guided questioning and really that young person is working through how to tackle it, whether it's building a LED lit nightlight, or soldering electronics, or it's doing quilt making and using fractals and geometry. There's a range of things that are possible, and it's driven by imagination.
That's exactly right. In fact, in our logo, which we're developing right now, it says driven by imagination. So really the way this came about in Juneau, Jeff, is that on warm, sunny summer afternoons, unlike today, we very often have the door open to our office down in the Foodland Shopping Plaza, and people would stick their heads in and they'd see all the stuff that we have laying around, the fun stuff like the rockets and the robots and so forth, and they'd say, yeah, this looks like a really fun place to work. And I would always say, yes, I have the best job at JEDC. I have the most fun. It would probably not true, but...
sounds good.
But it sounds good. So, you know, we said, well, why not invite kids to come in and share some of this fun and excitement? So we're going to supply the space and the supplies and the tools and hopefully some mentoring. We're looking for volunteers from the community to come in as mentors, but we supply all of that, but it's the kids who supply the imagination. It's driven by their creativity, their curiosity. They can come in, and our goal is they can just do whatever they want to, whatever comes to their mind, and we're going to just try to help them accomplish that. So it's a lot about success. It's a lot about failure. It's okay to fail. as long as you learn from those failures and learn how to fix the problem and move forward.
What age range are we talking about?
We're, at this point, not going to put a limit on the age range. We are going to insist that anywhere any kid under the age of 7 or 8 be accompanied by an adult at first, just to see how things go. But we really want to get a mix of ages because, you know, the older kids can supply some mentoring to the younger kids. The younger kids might have ideas the older kids wouldn't think of.
What kind of things are you to do?
Well, as I said, we build rockets. We can do a lot with robotics and programming. If the kids want to make leaded glass, we'll make leaded glass, lead glass. If they want to learn how to quilt, we can quilt. We can teach them how to make cheese, if they want to make cheese. Anything they want to do.
That's pretty exciting. How many people are invited to attend?
We're probably going to limit it to 10 kids. This will be happen on Saturday mornings at our workshop downtown. We're going to limit it to 10. There's been so much interest in the project so far that at first we were a little afraid we wouldn't get enough kids to attend. Now we're afraid we're going to get too many. So we'll have some sort of a sign-up, an online registration. So people should keep an eye on our website, jedc.org.
So the emphasis is on creativity, not necessarily building a rocket ship that will take a person to the moon.
That's right. The emphasis is on creativity.
And, you know, we should also mention there it taps local both talent, expertise, and resources. We need to say thank you to Julie and Dan Graves at Valley Lumber. They've been very generous in donating a variety of supplies that we made up a list that we wanted. Needed Home Depot just made a donation today. KTOO has donated some supplies.
When you say donated supplies, you mean you came to our electronic garage sale and grabbed all our junk that didn't work?
That's right, but that's a great take apart. And then I don't know how to do that stuff. I've got to come in and tinker because I don't know how to deal with electronics myself. And so Bob and others are really good at it. So they're, you know, I can figure out how to tinker and ask. They can help guide me along. Now I can bring to the table other knowledge and expertise that, you know, I don't think they have. And also, so adults out there listening, if you have something that you'd like to share and contribute, whether it's you're a quilter, an artist, whether you like to tinker with wood, build things, carve, we want to match that up with kids, that kind of expertise and the willingness to share and really help a young person along who's interested.
Does it start this Saturday?
No, it starts September 10th. Will be the first day. Registration will probably open on September 1st. It'll be online, as I said. And, again, just keep watching our website for details, jedc.org.
Is there a cost?
No, this is going to be free.
Sounds pretty exciting and creative at the same time.
That's what we're hoping for. Mary mentioned a couple of things we're looking for. If anybody knows how to make musical instruments, we'd love to have some of the kids make musical instruments. So really looking for expertise from the community, looking for donations from the community of materials. Juno Freecycle has been a godsend in terms of all the junk that I've accumulated in our workshop. And, of course, K2.
Some people call it junk.
Yeah, so yeah, one man's junk, right?
Yeah. All right, and if people want to get a hold of you, they can do so on your website?
They can go through my website, or they can phone me at 523-2342, or email me. It's rvieth, at jedc.org.
All right, Bob Vieth and Mary Hakala from the STEM program, talking about the Saturday thing starting in September. Thank you so much for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
We hope you come by, Jeff, and do some tinkering with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, that's right, I'm sad and blue, because I can't do the boogaloo. I'm lost, can't do my thing, and that's why I sing. Gimme that thing.
called the Pipkins. The time is 3:16, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is calling from Cloaca, Simon Roberts, who organized some number of things here at the radio station a few years ago. He started ThundercloudRadio.com. Simon, thank you very much for being on the air with us today.
Thank you for bringing me on today. Glad to be back on again.
So, Simon, tell me about what you've been up to lately.
What we've been doing so far, we've added a new social network for ThundercloudRadio.com. We'll be closing down ThunderCloud Radio and forwarding all the information to ThunderCloud.me, which is our new social network for ThunderCloud Radio. We created the first Native American hip-hop 24/7 365 radio online for Native American music, urban music, and then we added it's been about a year and a half we've been on air, and we decided that we ought to start taking new levels, so we added a social network, which will be launching next month on the 5th.
How did it get started in the first place?
It started out when I approached Clinkett and Haida for an idea. I wanted to do a Native American radio station, a hip-hop station, and they said, well, we'll do you one better. We want to bring you on board to help us start a radio. And so I had helped them launch tribalvoiceradio.com, and it had we were on there for about 9 months. Our grant didn't go through, so the project had fell, just like any department within an organization. If the grants don't go through, so does everything else fall. So I look at relaunching it again, though, on Clinkett.me. Clinkett.me is a social network for Northwest Natives, built by Natives. And so it's you can also find it at nativepride.me to take you to Clinkett.me. We had tried to find other names that would direct people into one network, so buying multiple domain names and siphoning them into one. We found that different names have different ways of presenting itself to the interest of everyone.
How many Native Americans are involved in the rap world?
We're that fewest emails of music. We have over 1,000 on the roster, but ones that feed us music constantly are 400, just roughly 400 that are emailing us music all the time, so it's quite a bit of fresh content that we have. Most things we know in the world of radio, they say, what do you mean you have too much content? That's never true in the world of radio. A DJ had told me once, and I says, well, with the amount of music that we're getting from a variety of new aspiring artists, and it's a new venue here, it's like, I don't know, we have unlimited amounts of music always seem to be pouring in, so it's hard to go through all of them, edit it, and then upload it. So we're looking at branching out here to a corporation by the end of the year.
In general, what are the songs about?
They range anywhere from Native pride to militancy for Native Americans, love music, as well as just like in the traditional world of hip-hop, you see artists where they have beef with another, where they're fighting against the other, not only on the songs, but possibly in public. So we have something similar to that with the Native American hip-hop.
And how can you tell how many listeners you have?
On our site, though, you can tell if you go to the Shoutcast Yellow Pages. Shoutcast tells you how many users that you have on at any given time. We've also created a search engine for Native American hip-hop. We're accepting emails at this time for those that we don't have on the in our search engine. We've seen that there was nothing out there like that, so we sought out some scripts to put on a web page, and we're indexing them right now with Native American web pages, whether it be their MySpace, Facebook, or Twitter, or even their traditional home brochure page, with as well as their SoundCloud and CD Baby pages. We're trying to have each and every avenue that we can to promote their music through our search engine.
For those who are listening, could you define the phrase rap and hip hop?
Rap would be more hardcore, more grittier. Hip hop is more upbeat, more outgoing, more positive message.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get to discover the world of hip hop?
Hip hop, I had stumbled across it, hearing certain tracks here and there. My dad would be playing. He always liked Top 40, so eventually started creeping into the charts as we know it back in the 80s. And so I'd hear him as a child playing Top 40, even though he didn't like rap himself, but he would still listen to it because it was on a Top 40 playlist, whether it be country, rock, or any genre at the time.
What are some of the names of the leading artists in the field?
Right now, we have like Red Cloud, which is one of our, he's actually one of the most well-versed word that you hear in every reservation. We also have Lightfoot on there, which is also well-versed. We also have Joey Styles, which is blowing. He's blowing it, the track that I'd sent you. He's actually, it's one of his older tracks, but he's blowing it right now in Canada. And so it's, he's like on the mainstream circuit up there. And we're glad to have him on our Thundercloud down here. So we represent all of North American natives. From Hawaii to Greenland is our slogan.
What have you learned? What have you learned in the process of doing all this?
A lot of rapport. Each one of the artists, it's always one-on-one, whether it be instant messaging them, trying to instant message or emails, or them calling up. It's constant, ongoing rapport process.
Before we went on the air, we talked about, or you mentioned that it was people think you do a lot of emailing, and most of your work, it seems to be done by telephone.
I try to do as much phone work as I can. I'd prefer to, it's easier to get a message across, the buzzwords across a lot quicker. A buzzword sounds better in person than it does in an email or in a text. It sounds so cold-hearted when you text something, trying to create excitement. And so it's a lot easier. I like to prefer them to call me up or leave phone numbers for them. One of our other things that we had incurred on ThundercloudRadio.com last summer, we were approached by DJ Nur from producer of Discovery Channel. He's not a DJ, it's just his initials. But he had approached us for Native American hip-hop in their own language for their show Flying Wild Alaska on the Discovery Channel. And we were able to provide them with a large size of artists that had rapped in their language or crossed between English and their native tongue. And about 28 or 29 of our songs were on the first season, and we're getting ready to be on the second season with our music from Thundercloud.
How can people listen to Thundercloud at their personal computer?
Excuse me?
How can people listen to Thundercloud Radio?
You can go to thundercloudradio.com, or you can go to shoutcast.com on the yellow pages and type in Thundercloud Radio, or just type in Thundercloud and you should see us Thundercloud Radio pop up on the grid there. There's only a couple of Thunderclouds on there.
I'm talking to Simon Roberts, who's involved with Thundercloud Radio. Simon, where do you think you're going to be in about a year from now?
Since we're going corporate, adding on a record label and some compilations as well as greatest hit CDs at the end of this year on here, and we're looking at endeavoring an online magazine and a few other areas too with Native American hip-hop, trying to build the home to go to for North American Native hip-hop. I figure if I'm going to France and I want to rap with somebody from France, not somebody that came there from Russia that's rapping in France and representing there, just like if they were to come here, I want them to rap with the original artist from this country.
All right, Simon Roberts, thank you very much for being on the show with me today.
Great. You have a wonderful day. And check us out on thundercloud.me. We open up on the 5th of next month.
All right, Simon, will do. Thanks so much.
You have a great day.
Joseph Steelers et Savoir.
Jay Bumpy. my vocal bang. My sugar, sugar, sugar cake. She take me away. My sugar, sugar, sugar cake. She take me away.
Tonight on 360 North at 7 p.m., it's the BBC World News, followed by Alaska weather at 7:30. On Science for Alaska at 8, learn about the dynamic glaciers of Southeast Alaska with Chris Larson of the University of Alaska's Geophysical Institute. At 9, it's the curious Mr. Catesby. A century before Audubon, this naturalist drew and published famous natural history works and studies of birds. Great science programming tonight on 360 North.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 15th of August, 2011. It's the birthday of the journalist and novelist Stieg Larsson, born 1954 in Skelleftehamn in Sweden, grew up in the north of Sweden, went to school on cross-country skis. His grandfather was a strong anti-fascist, and Stieg Larsson adopted his grandfather's views, became a muckraking journalist, founded the Swedish Expo Foundation to, quote, counteract the growth of the extreme right and the white power culture in schools and among young people. He was a journalist who took up fiction as a way to make some extra money. By 2003, he had written two novels. He'd started on a third. He approached an editor. He planned a series of 10 detective thrillers called the Millennium Series, and then died of a heart attack in 2004. The three novels published posthumously. The first book, titled in Swedish Men Who Hate Women, better known in our country as The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It's the birthday of a poet who took up writing novels for money, Sir Walter Scott, born Edinburgh, 1771. He wrote narrative romances in verse, but he was a partner in a printing firm that almost went bankrupt. He paid the firm's debts, almost went under himself, and so he published his novel Waverley in 1814. It was a big success. Followed it with Rob Roy, The Bride of Lammermoor, and Ivanhoe. It's the birthday of Edna Ferber, born 1885, Kalamazoo, Michigan. Started out as a journalist in Appleton, Wisconsin. Later moved to New York, became part of the Algonquin Round Table. Best known for her novel of 1924, So Big, also Showboat, which was made into a musical by Jerome Kern, Oscar Hammerstein II. Her obituary on the front page of the New York Times said her books were not profound, but they were vivid. It's the birthday of the poet and playwright Mary Jo Salter, 1954, Grand Rapids, Michigan, grew up in Detroit and Baltimore, a formalist poet working with meter, rhyme, writing quatrains, sonnets, villanelles. Most recent collection was A Phone Call to the Future. Here's a poem for today by Jennifer O'Grady, entitled Moths. Adrift in the liberating late light of August, delicate, frivolous, they make their way to my front porch and flutter near the glassed-in bulb, translucent as a thought suddenly wondered aloud, illumining the air that's thick with honeysuckle and dusk. You and I are doing our best at conversation, keeping it light, steering clear of what we'd like to say. You leave, and the night becomes cluttered with moths, some tattered, their dumbly curious filaments startling against my cheek. How quickly, instinctively, I brush them away. Dazed, they cling to the outer darkness, like pale reminders of ourselves. Others seem to want so desperately to get inside. Months later, I'll find the woolens snug in their resting places, full of missing pieces. A poem by Jennifer O'Grady, Moths, from her collection White, published by Midlist Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. Produced by Kathy Roach and written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:33 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. This week there's going to be several workshops put on at the Temple Shukat Shalom, and I've invited several people from the temple to come and talk to me about it. Rabbi Spiro and also Master J.B. Lunan and Joan Pardis is here from the temple itself to talk about the number of workshops going on in the next few days. Joan, thank you, first of all, everybody, for coming down to the station.
Thank you for having us.
Joan, you want to give us an overview of this?
Sure. Congregation Shukat Shalom is thrilled to present these adult ed workshops during the week. We have Rabbi Spiro of LivingJudaism.com from Seattle and Master Lunan, a ninth-degree black belt from Seattle for Maccabee Martial Arts, coming here in town. They're running our camp for our kids, and while they're here, they're offering a variety of adult education courses at the temple on Douglas on Cordova Street. So Rabbi Spiro is offering 2 talks, one about Kabbalah, one about relationships, and Master Lenin is doing a 3-part Kung Fu boot camp. People could come for 1 class or 3 classes. If you come for 3 classes, you could receive certification.
First of all, Rabbi Spiro, could you give us an idea about LivingJudaism.com? Could you give us some background?
Well, actually, it's not .com. It's actually a real organization. We exist in real time and space. But we do have a website, LivingJudaism.com. Our organization is based in Seattle, and it is it's an educational organization. Our goal is to bring Jewish spirituality into people's lives in a way that helps them to simplify their lives and to find their inner wisdom and power and use those in ways that improve their lives and their marriages and in their relationships in general.
Is spirituality vanishing more and more these days, or
is spirituality vanishing? I don't know. It seems like it's a little bit on the resurgence also, I would say. There's a lot of people out there who are interested and looking, but there's also a lot of distractions out there as well.
Such as?
The internet. And then there's the internet and television and movies and all of the, I think more than ever, we have things that are competing for attention. It feels like that, at least. There's so many choices and distractions.
And how do you bring back spirituality into people's lives?
Well, I think you have to speak. You're bringing something that goes back thousands of years, but you have to understand that it still addresses human beings, and we haven't changed essentially. So you have to bring it to people in a way where they can hear it for themselves in their lives that's relevant and meaningful and works for them where they are.
Doing 2 workshops on the body, the soul, the afterlife, and Kabbalistic insights into the nature of death and dying. It's happening this Tuesday. It's from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Could you give us an overview of that lecture, please?
Well, I think a lot of people have a lot of questions. Jews, up until recently, didn't understand that there was a mystical. Most Jews had no idea there was a mystical side to their religion. And that we addressed issues dealing with the death and the afterlife and the nature of who we are, body versus soul. So we're going to take a pretty deep look into, you know, why are we here and how are we made up as human beings and you know, what does Judaism say about this existence versus any other potential existence in the next world? Is there a heaven and a hell in Judaism? Why do we do certain things, mourning customs? Really, we're going to go across the board and I think address a lot of questions that people may have about their religion, or even people who aren't Jewish who just like to hear from an ancient and deep spiritual source, something that I always tell people when we're learning this, it's really essentially not about death. It's really more about, it really informs us about what we're here for when we're living. And I think that's the most important point that I hope people walk away with.
How many similarities or differences are there between the Jewish way of viewing the afterlife and the Christian way of viewing it?
Well, not being an expert on Christianity, it would be hard for me to say. I'd be hesitant to put myself out on that limb, but I know there are some differences for sure. What's interesting is how many Jews assume that many of the notions about the afterlife are Christian. A lot of Jews assume we don't have much to say about the afterlife. Most Jews assume there is no concept of purgatory in Judaism. So people actually might be surprised to find out that there are actually more similarities than they would have expected. But my sense is there are some major differences in philosophy also behind that, although it would be probably a little difficult to outline those.
In the second workshop, you're going to be leading men, women in the Garden of Eden. That's Wednesday the 17th at 7:30 until 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate on that, please?
So I'm hoping to give people a little more of an inside look as opposed to just lecturing from my notes, give people a chance to actually look inside one of the most certainly well-known and profound sections of the Torah known by people across the world. The Garden of Eden story, which I think has a lot to tell us about a very relevant issue, which is marriage, relationships, and men and women, and why do we get married, and what's sort of the essence of it, and how do we make it work? I think there's a lot in there, and I'm hoping to give people an opportunity to get a taste of some of the depth that's in what looks like, you know, some simple lines, but actually contains, I think, a lot more that is quite relevant to people.
And is there a charge for the workshops?
Yes, there are, Jeff. Both workshops are at the temple, as I said, which is on Cordova Street. If you head over to Douglas, let's say to Sandy Beach over the bridge, you take the first right, it's a couple of blocks up on the right. These workshops are open to everyone, and they're $25 a class for Rabbi Spiro's classes, and if you want to commit to both, it's $40. And they're from 7:30 to 9 Tuesday and Wednesday night. The Kabbalah, Body, Soul, and Afterlife workshop on Tuesday, and Men, Women, and the Garden of Eden on Wednesday.
Also in the studio with us is Master J.B. Lennon. He's an expert in Kung Fu. He's going to be teaching a workshop on Kung Fu boot camp, self-defense classes that combine Kung Fu, Karate, and Krav Maga, taught by Grandmaster J.B. Lennon. What is Krav Maga?
First of all, I'd like to, again, extend our condolences to the family who lost their loved one down in Arkansas. It has touched all of our lives. Getting back, Commando Krav Maga is the Israeli fighting system that is taught to the elite forces in the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. And what it is basically it's just straight, no-nonsense, quick, upfront and in a hurry, taking a person out of the equation who is attacking you. A lot of the movements are very simple, very easy to learn, but as anything, we learn by rote. So we do things over and over and over and over again. The course, the boot camp, will be teaching 7 different techniques on each day, and we will test you at the end to see if you can do and remember what you've learned that day in a 3-minute drill where people will come at you to choke you from behind and front. People will come to punch you and see how you defend yourself. Everything will be done slowly, of course, as you build up over the two-hour period until you can finally just do it at rapid speed. This is how we learn, and at the end of the course, you should retain quite a bit for the rest of your life.
You'd be teaching adults or actually anybody over the age of 16?
16 and up, yes. Simply because what we're showing in these particular classes, we don't want the children to start practicing on each other because it's quite dangerous, yes.
What's the difference between teaching adults and teaching younger people?
Well, there's various differences, of course. Age, number one. Children have bigger, as we say, gas tanks, and they tend to be more physical, where adults, because of the responsibilities of being an adult, don't have a lot of time. You know, they tend to forget their bodies and souls and don't spend a lot of time exercising. So what we try to do in this boot camp is we try to condition them, not to the point they're not going to be able to go to work tomorrow morning, but to try to help them get in some fairly decent shape, because self-defense is about that. You need to take care of yourself in every aspect.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background, please?
My background, let's see, I was born in Toledo, Ohio, and I moved to the East Coast when I was 8. Started studying Kung Fu when I was about 12, back when Kung Fu wasn't even heard of. Karate was just making the American scene, and Judo had been there here. But unless you grew up around a Chinatown and woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you really didn't know what Chinese martial arts were. Fortunately, I went to a camp with a young Chinese man, and him and I became good friends. And his father happened to have been the Grand Master of Hungar, Tiger Crane System. So I was introduced to Chinese martial arts then at a very, very young age. And then I had to go to New York about a year and a half later and prove myself on Mott Street before I was fully accepted. So that's where my career began, yes.
Well, why is it important for people to learn to self-defense?
It's very important, especially when you live in areas like Alaska and you live in the state of Washington, because the rest of the states aren't quite set up the way we are. We're set up as sort of like a cocoon. We're sort of isolated, and where we smile at each other and we take people's word for what they are. And when you leave these sheltered areas and you go into the rest of the states, it's not like that. And if you are not prepared to deal with it, you can become a victim. It's been proven time and time again. Like, for instance, in New York, if you're walking down the street and you're looking up at the buildings, right away the criminals know that you're not from New York City. You can become a victim just by a little gesture of looking up. If you're riding the train and you happen to have a wedding ring on with a diamond, or you're wearing jewelry, people know that you're not from New York, because people in New York just don't expose their jewelry. I mean, just these very little things that we take for granted can expose you and make you a target for the criminals. So being aware of your environment is something that we aren't accustomed of, because we have an environment that's very outgoing and free. So these are things that we're going to learn in the boot camp, and how to protect yourself just by the way you dress and how you hold yourself when you leave Alaska when you leave Washington State.
And on the poster here it says, learn how to protect yourself physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Could you elaborate on emotionally and spiritually?
Yes. By becoming self-confident, when you know in your heart and in your mind that you can protect yourself, you become confident. You know how to avoid situations. You know that if you're going outside and it's dark and you have to walk from your car, you know to either get your keys out or get whatever thing you need to protect yourself. You know that you're supposed to look both ways. And if you still don't feel comfortable, you listen to that voice inside you and you go back inside and you call someone. That little voice inside you protects you. and people tend to overlook it. I had a student one time who was very, very, very apt in martial arts, but then again, he was he tried to be politically correct when six guys tried to jump him. He didn't want them to think that he was a racist or anything. So he didn't do anything. He didn't listen to that little voice, and he was jumped. Fortunately, he was able to defend himself enough to be able to survive, because most times when six people jump you, you don't survive. But he didn't listen to that little voice. So it's spiritually, you must listen to the little voice inside you that's always there telling you that this is not a good thing.
Kung Fu Boot Camp goes Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday on the Temple Shukat Shalom. Is there a charge for that?
Yes, there is. It is $95 for all three sessions. If you come to all three sessions, you have the potential to become certified. And if you'd like to just come for one class, it's $40 a class. If you'd like to come and check out the class and come on Tuesday and then realize that you want to come for the two other classes, that would be great. I've studied with Master Lin, and I think it's a terrific class. He's teaching the kids at the temple self-defense, age-appropriate self-defense moves from 5 to 10 years. For 5 to 10 year olds, and I think both these opportunities, both Rabbi Spiro and Master Lennon's classes, are a unique opportunity, and well worth the time to come out and check it out.
And those youth classes are going on this week?
Yes, we have camp at the temple this week.
And if people are interested in that, is it closed up already? Or?
Yeah, it's already full. Sorry, it's already in session.
If people need more information, is there a phone number or email?
Yes. For either of these classes, you could call 321-8787 or check out the website for sukkotshalomalaska.net. But an easier thing to remember might be 321-8787. As far as the lectures, Rabbi Spiro's lectures, we have plenty of room. But for the Kung Fu Boot Camp, if you're interested, I urge you to call and reserve your spot because it is space limited.
All right, Joan Pardis, Rabbi Spiro, and Master J.B. Lunin, thank you very much for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Yes, the name is Lunin.
Lunin, I know. As soon as I said that, I messed up. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yes, so all you do is you take this washing thing, you put some plastic tube, you take a mouthpiece, and you've got a perfect tuba.
A tuba. You call that a tuba?
Well, actually, I call it a sewer phone. But it will play exactly what you play, just as good as you, as I can play on this sewer phone, you can play on that, then I can play on this. Go ahead, try it, wise guy. Wait a minute, just do it again. I wasn't ready. If you play it a little higher, I think I could do it if you play it a little higher. Go ahead. Maybe lower. Yeah, just go, yeah, it's a little lower.
Your turn's coming.
When you walk in the Garden of Eden, with a beautiful woman, and you know how you care, and a voice in the Garden of Eden, tells you she is forbidden, can you leave her there? When you yearning for loving, and she touches your hand, in the Garden of Eden, with a beautiful woman, and you know how you care, and a voice in the Garden of Eden, tells you she is forbidden, can you leave her there?
Hi, this is Phil Smith. I'm a member of Veterans for Peace, and I'm the regular host of the Monday evening program, Peace Talk. Peace Talk features recordings of important messages from leaders around the world, interviews with activists and others with something important to say, and the music of peace. That's Peace Talk this coming Monday evening at 7 o'clock here on KTOO FM.
This is Bird Note. Even without taking a poll, is there any doubt about the identity of America's best-known red bird? Surely it's the cardinal, or as you'll find in a bird book, the northern cardinal. The cardinal's scarlet crested image adorns Christmas cards, bags of birdseed, and any number of sports team jerseys. It is simply, and being red doesn't hurt here, one of our best-known backyard birds. So, would it surprise you to learn that cardinals are missing from backyards in nearly half of the United States? It's the half west of the Rockies. Or that only about half of all cardinals are red. Females are olive brown with a few red highlights. It's also true that the cardinal seen on so many bird feeders takes its name from the cardinals found in the Vatican, whose hats and robes are red. And among the cardinal's near relatives, the cardinal on the bird feeder, that is, two are also very red birds, the summer tanager and scarlet tanager. But despite their beauty, tanagers are unlikely to unseat the cardinal as our best-known red bird. Do you have friends who'd enjoy this Bird Note show? Send it to them from our website. That's birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
3:58, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sirtuna at 91.9. An excursion inlet and icy straight here, KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. Or also online at ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll find out about this Wednesday's observance of Landscape Architecture Day with guests George Schaff and Michelle Elfers. Learn about a voice workshop for people recovering from a stroke and Parkinson's disease. We get a head start on this weekend's 50K race with Keith Levy. And we'll be talking to Wayne Hicks and rally supervisor. He's going to be here to help us get ready for back to school. That Red is Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, rain possibly heavy at times with low temperatures around 49 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, more rain with high temperatures around 54 degrees. Rain likely Tuesday night. It looks like rain predicted through the rest of the week. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon tonight. Remember, Peace Talk comes your way at 7 o'clock here on listener-supported KTUO News Juneau. Thank you for tuning in.